We have a special guest this morning that's not listed in your program. It's the Reverend Don Kefauver, who is going to read one of his original poems, which is I Forgive Me. Don.
The stage has already been set, as you can see. We had this great little talk about grudge, and when you're holding a grudge, there's something wrong that you haven't forgiven yourself. And also Jim's title, Laying His Burden Down. When you lay your burden down, you have to wonder if you've laid it all down, and if not, there's something wrong, and that should be corrected. And that's what happens now, I hope. Because everything that's been said here is about forgiving somebody else, you know, or being forgiven by somebody else. But this thought I had was to forgive yourself. And it came from inside of me because that's what I needed to do. And that's what I've been trying to practice, is to forgive myself. And so I've wrote this little poem in response to that. I wonder when I'm feeling blue from something I have said to you, do you think we will still be like old friends? Is there some way I can make amends? As I reflect back through the years of all the anger, hurt, and tears, and guilt rears its ugly head, making shame my daily bread. How can I be a friend to you while traveling down this avenue, feeling that I've always been will come to haunt me once again? When I visualize you as me and how all your faults I see, I can still embrace you with my heart and forgive with ease your brave new start. So would it be so odd and vain to embrace myself without disdain and free myself so I can live by simply saying, I forgive. It's very difficult. It's a hard road to travel. And I hope you will think about that. And I've been practicing it now for some time. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Don's poem this morning focuses on forgiveness of oneself. I forgive me. But then he even emphasized that in his remarks, that forgiveness of self. And I really appreciate that. Don first read that, I think, it may have been 5 years ago now, when we did a forgiveness sermon where Don and Reverend Michael Carter and I shared that space and did that. And that poem, just the title and then the last part, has become part of my personal scripture. If you think about that, we all have that. It doesn't have to be from the Bible, you know. It's that those words that inform us. And it partly because I know Don, and he's a part of my world and a part of my life, and he put these thoughts down. The title helps me here, forgive, with the emphasis more inside me, in addition to that more typical move outside on the you of the person or another person. I wonder when I am feeling blue from something I have said to you, is there some way I can make amends? As I reflect back through the years on all the anger, hurt, and tears, and guilt rears its ugly head, and I changed one word, how can I be a friend to me? Changed from you. While I'm fearing what I've always been will come to haunt me once again, that I'll do this again and again, or if I'm trying to make a change in myself, that I won't be able to do it because what I've always been will just come back even after I try to be different. How can I be a friend to me, fearing what I've always been will come back to haunt me once again, the fear that I'll make the same mistake again? I hope I can still embrace me with my heart and forgive with ease my brave new start. So would it be so odd and vain to embrace myself without disdain, and in so doing, free myself so I could live, so I can live? As Don says, I free myself so I can live by forgiving myself along with those I have wronged. Then the poem concludes with a line by simply saying, I forgive. And Don added a piece to that. What did he say? He said, I've been practicing that for many years. So today we'll see that the word sounds simple, but there's more to it before forgiveness becomes simple, or before we embrace it and move with it as simple practice that we just do. Reverend Kate Tucker reminds us that no matter how careful we are, and I read that word as care-full, full of care, no matter how careful we are, we can never avoid hurting and being hurt. That's the human condition. That's why we need forgiveness as a practice. Forgiving and being forgiven is or should be a lifetime work, a work of a lifetime. The hospice booklet that hospice hands out to patients near the end of their lives says there are four things we need to say to get our life in order, to organize it, to be at peace, to be in right relationship with life. And two out of those four things we need to say to each other pertain to forgiveness. The four things are, thank you, I love you, I forgive you. What's the fourth one? Please forgive me. Again, I would suggest that we also must be able to say those four things to ourselves. Imagine yourself doing that. Thank you. I love you. I forgive you. Please forgive me. How that turns around. How does that feel? Just even to make that move, I like it. Would it be so odd and vain to embrace myself without disdain and in so doing free myself so I could live, so I can live, lay my burdens down? So what is forgiveness? What does it mean to forgive? It seems like a word we know, we use it, but it's not something many of us practice with much intention. I want forgiveness to be more than a word or a concept. I want it to be a practice, a lifelong practice. So when hospice hands me that book, it's not a big house cleaning task. It's in order. It's just the next thing I do, and I understand it. I understand how it feels. A lifelong practice, something I do, and something I come to know better in the doing, something that becomes more a part of me and my life as I practice it, so I can sense it and apply it mindfully in daily interactions. I can tell you there have been several moments this morning already where I could ask for forgiveness or deal with forgiving myself, being sensitive to the energy of what's going on, and then my own insecurities and codependence, and you know, it just goes down the line how that works. And I'm really much better at beating up on myself than I am. I practice that a lot. So how to replace that with forgiveness? Something that becomes more a part of me and my life as I practice it so that I can sense it and apply it mindfully in daily interactions, and even in those little reactions of hurt and blame and judgment and anger and righteousness. Ooh, that feels so good for the moment. The tagline of the Greater Good Science Center at the University of California at Berkeley is Science for a Meaningful Life. Yes, I know that sounds very Californian, but I almost didn't use it because it sounded so Californian, but it can also be heard as our understanding of faith for a meaningful life, where faith is that meaning-making for that bigger understanding. Here's how they define forgiveness. Psychologists generally define forgiveness as a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance toward a person or group who has harmed you, regardless of whether they actually deserve your forgiveness. Just as important as defining what forgiveness is, though, is understanding what forgiveness is not. Experts who study or teach forgiveness make clear that when you forgive, you do not gloss over or deny the seriousness of an offense against you. If you've been listening to any of the political commentary over the last several days, there's been the language of forgiveness being used very quickly. All right? I would say there comes a time for, and we'll talk about that more next week, sort of in the time of, like the time for healing. It's too soon. It's too soon to forgive. Forgiveness does not mean forgetting, nor does it mean condoning or excusing offenses. Though forgiveness can help repair a damaged relationship, it doesn't obligate you to reconcile with the person who harmed you or release them from legal accountability. Instead, forgiveness brings the forgiver peace of mind and frees him or her from corrosive anger. While there is some debate over whether true forgiveness requires positive feelings toward the offender, experts agree that it at least involves letting go of deeply held negative feelings. In that way, it empowers you to recognize the pain you suffered without letting that pain define you, enabling you to heal and move on with your life. Recognizing the pain without letting the pain define you, enabling you to heal and move on with your life. Heal and move on, where the move is not just a move forward, but actually a return to the wholeness of you and life that is always there. Healing is the theme for this month that we are sharing as part of the Soul Matters group of Unitarian Universalist congregations, and it frames it like a question: what does it mean to be a community of healing? And healing, by definition, means to make healthy or whole, wholeness. Our Universalist tradition establishes a big picture of what I might call healing and wholeness, one that we live in and that we're also then a part of creating and making real. An inclusive universe, an inclusive vision of one human family, one origin, one nature, one destiny, a loving God or connection that actually permeates all existence. Then separations and divisions, whether real or felt, move us out of right relationship with life and love, sort of this larger love. And the last line in our response, call and response, so it said, all those hurts, real or imagined, that create the illusion of what? Of separateness. 19th century Universalists understood this as sin. Sin, it was that which takes us out of right relationship with God and life, that which takes us out of the feeling of right belonging. It turns out, too, that sin in Latin language and then forward has its origins in archery, and it means missing the mark. Missing the center part of the target. If you miss the target completely, that's a miss. But the word for missing the center is sin. So being a little bit off center. Unitarian Universalist theologian Rebecca Parker, in her book, A House of Hope, House of Hoke, that's a good slip. I wish he were here. A House of Hope talks about right relationship with life and the universe and God as salvation. It's a word many of us know. But she says that progressive religious liberals, us that is, believe that we are saved to the extent that we are able to live the gift of life fully in the present, not separate from it. To the extent that we are able to feel life's joy in our present situation, we are then in right relationship with life. 5 years ago, when I was referencing that sermon we did, that was 2011, Hannah, my daughter, was then 17. So I wrote that this notion of feeling life's joy in the present was not an abstract concept, because I had moments of feeling that because I lived with a joyful teenager. It was so much fun to go back and read that and then remember the morning, which I told you about, when at 7 a.m. upon her discovery, so that's 7 a.m., you've just waked up. Upon her discovery, it was an early morning text, that a good summer friend from another state was planning to come to Hendersonville just to see her in the next month. I heard the news shouted from the back bedroom, followed by, "Wow, Dad, this is what life should be about." Feel that. And now listen to yourself and how quickly the yes buts of reality speak up. You're going, oh, she's just naive and she doesn't have to deal with all this. And think of all the burdens. Think of all the burdens of just simple responsibilities, much less imagined wrongs that pile onto that feeling. This is what life should be about. Wow, Dad. We are saved to the extent that we are able to experience the gift of life fully. Somebody please help me lay my burdens down. Particularly those that I bring on myself, which is the majority of them. And unnecessarily then add to my load. Help me so I can really feel what life should be about, or as my universalist and Buddhist traditions would say, so I can feel what life is about. This Tuesday, October 11th, is Yom Kippur. It's the Jewish Day of Atonement. It also happens to be National Coming Out Day. So there's kind of a mix here. It's really great. It's the last day of the celebration of the Jewish New Year, and it's the day for signing the Book of Life for another year. Signing up, what? For life and love for another year. They acknowledge that as we live, we accumulate the burdens of our mistakes, our sins, as it were, where we've missed the mark. And then through the days of the New Year leading up to Yom Kippur, we're reminded that it's a good idea to lighten our load. And in the write-up, I separated enlighten ourselves so we can think of it as a practice. We are given a chance to put those burdens down and begin again in right relationship with God or life and love. We begin again in right relationship with ourselves. We begin again in right relationship with those around us. And the path to full aliveness runs where? Through the practice of forgiveness. Reflecting on our wrongs and hurts, asking for forgiveness from those we have wronged, and offering forgiveness to those who have hurt us in order to lay our existential burdens down. UU minister Forrest Church wrote that on those rare yet blessed moments that we make full peace with ourselves, with others, and with the cosmos, the ground of our being, those rare moments, we experience salvation. And I would say with practice, those blessed moments don't need to be, won't be, so rare. We live with daily hurts to us, along with hurts of the wrongs we do. We carry our hurts. We hold them. We hold them until at some point the reality that happened that hurt us or that we did has retreated from us and has faded and is being maintained from within us. But we continue to behave as if we are hurt. We live hurt. We live feeling separated from right relationship with our lives. No matter how careful we are, we can never avoid hurting and being hurt. That's the human condition. But there is a path, a practice for salvation. Yom Kippur reminds us that there are wrongs that can be put down and there are ways to let them go for life and love, for others and for ourselves. Forgiveness holds the hope of right relationship and makes it possible and real. Mark Twain said that forgiveness is the fragrance that the violet sheds on the heel that has crushed it. It's the ability to share love even when or after something or somebody bruises or crushes you. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, in her book, Women Who Run With the Wolves, has a very useful piece on forgiveness that I now borrow from Reverend Kate Tucker. She reminds us that forgiveness is not a singular act done once and completed. I've forgiven, I'm on with it, but a process to begin and continue. It is not a surrender. It doesn't mean to overlook or to act as if a thing has not occurred. It means to cease to harbor resentment and to give up one's resolve to retaliate. Then she asks and answers the useful question, how does one know that one has forgiven? She says, you tend to feel sorrow instead of rage. You tend to have nothing left to remember to say about it. You are not waiting for anything. You are not wanting for anything. There is no lariat snare around your ankle stretching from way back there to here. You are free to go. It may not have turned out to be a happily ever after, but most certainly there is now a fresh once upon a time waiting for you from this day forward. A fresh once upon a time waiting for you from this day forward. Fresh, free to go. How many of you have already heard my story of the monks walking along and meeting a lady at the stream? That many haven't? Well, it's another part of my personal scripture. It's familiar to many of you. It's a story of an older monk and a novice on a journey, and when they come to the place to ford the stream, there's an elderly woman who asks for help in crossing the stream. The older monk offers to carry her across on his back. They come across safely. She gets down, and the monks proceed on their way. But it's obvious that the novice is not himself. He's separated from that flow. The novice is not himself, and much later in the day, the older monk asks him, "What is the matter?" Rinpoche, he replies, "You touched that woman back there at the stream, and it is against our precepts. We are not to touch women." "Yes, I did," replied the older monk. "And when I helped her to the other side, as she asked, I put her down. You have now been carrying her all afternoon." Here's two moments of practicing forgiveness that I've done in the last 2 weeks. It's in the spirit, and the High Holy Days create the intro to it. There are people in this congregation who love this congregation and love Unitarian Universalism, and who, for whatever reason, either in a moment or in a general sense, don't love me. And I know some of those people. And I know that they come to service when I'm not here. Because sometimes I come to service when I'm not here, you know? It also gets back to me by way of different things, and I've tried addressing it, but I carry this with me. It may not even live in them anymore. You heard what I just described. I just described a burden that I'm carrying. May or may not be real, but that's how I frame it. So I went up to somebody a couple of weeks ago. I've actually done this a couple of times, and I said, it's really good to see you. I really like seeing you, and that's true. I've worked this since, I really do. And in the spirit of the High Holy Days, I would just like to say to you and ask you, let's see, how did I say it? I said, I would like to know, and I introduced a little bit of that other, but I would like to know where you feel I have wronged you. And hear that. And then that's not to go to ask them to understand. It's not to go to defend. It's to have that moment to know what I really need to ask for forgiveness for. And I did that. It could be that I just, because people will say, oh, Jim, just put it down. Just put it down, walk away. But they love this congregation. It's important in this community. It's important in this place. And there's a barrier here that I need to reach across. I also happen to like them. So that makes it hard too. And that's true of everybody. But so what do? I take that energy to try to reach across the separation and create the opportunity. And they said, thank you. They'll get back to me. So what did I do? I presented that opportunity for forgiveness. I said it to somebody else because I knew I had said something in trying to establish a deeper feeling of something they were interested in that they said, I don't know why Jim takes that so negatively. And I wasn't. I didn't feel that. But I said to him, I really want to say I'm sorry for that way that came across. And they said, oh, no, you know, they said, don't mind that. That doesn't mind. Well, that doesn't work real well either. Because in saying it, if you're in that position, you want to say, and I came back, I said, no, I really mean it. That means, please sit with that a minute. And then they said, we hear you. Yeah, that's okay. Let's go on. So there's that. There was another interaction where two Sundays ago after the service, somebody came up to me and said, people were saying how much they liked the service. And this person said, Jim, I didn't really like the service. And I responded quickly. It was in good humor. I mean, I responded quickly. But I said why I thought they didn't. And that wasn't the reason. But what they said was, no, I really liked it, the way it was organized. But I didn't like you asking me to do something because I am at peace now. And I didn't want to be asked to literally pick something else up. And I'll come back to that. So the whole week, I realized that I had jumped in and said something that wasn't right. It created that uncomfortable energy. So I came up to this person last week to say, I'm really sorry that I did, that I said that. And this person said, yeah, and I've been carrying, it bothered me. And so here we'd been carrying this burden all week. Literally, we'd been carrying it with us all week. And then in speaking together, not only did we get to put it down, but this person said, my heart is really moved by the fact that we just did this. Changed the world in that moment. And what they were saying about being at peace was meaning more in the hospice sense, really, of I'm at peace with my life and I don't want to pick up another burden right now. I don't want to pick that up and have to do it. So I got to meditate on that during the week and understand it. But it never would have happened if we hadn't done that interaction, gone across the barrier of the discomfort or whatever to say and risk to move from blame and struggle to I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Theologian Matthew Fox takes us back to the larger picture of which our actions are a part. The universe forgives, the earth moves on, wild daisies bloom on the battlefield. Jesus said to his disciples something they didn't quite understand at the time. He said, "One who has been forgiven much loves much." I had breakfast last week with a friend who is a practitioner and teacher in the Course in Miracles, and he brought up the subject of forgiveness on his own, and it was about what was going on in his own life. And then he quoted the Course in Miracles as saying, "When I have forgiven myself and remembered who I am, when I have forgiven myself and remembered who I am, I will bless everyone I see." He says he practices that every day from when he wakes up to when he goes to bed. It's another way of understanding one who has been forgiven much, forgiving oneself even. One who has been forgiven much loves much and blesses the world. It can start right now with forgiving yourself much. I can't do that much, but I try. Daily practice forgiving yourself much. Practice it for the new year. In each moment of your awareness, lay my burdens down. So to paraphrase Don, in conclusion, it wouldn't be so odd and vain to embrace yourself without disdain and free yourself so you can live by simply practicing, "I forgive." There is now a fresh once upon a time waiting for you from this moment forward.